What's good, everyone? My name is Jacob Moses, community builder at Strongtowns, and welcome to It's the Little Things, a Strongtowns podcast where in each episode, we focus on a different action that you, the concerned citizen, the elected official, the city planner, can take to make your town stronger. This episode's action, documenting your city. And this is a particularly important episode, especially for the students and recent graduates listening, because if you're like me or my guest today, Alyssa Walker, you didn't pursue a city-related degree, but you know, then you found out about Strongtowns, and now you're pumped about the wellness of our cities, and may believe that the only way you can contribute is to go back to school and study them. That's not true. In fact, as a city dweller who didn't pursue a city-related degree and is exploring your city on foot, on bike, on public transit, you have a unique and powerful perspective on how our cities work. You're walking to the coffee shops, noticing the missing sidewalks along the way. You're riding your bike to the grocery, noticing how long your neighbors have to wait at the crosswalk. These are things that your city planner likely doesn't notice, yet needs to know about to make your town stronger. All you need to do is document it. In this episode, we'll chat with Alyssa Walker, Los Angeles resident and urbanism editor at Curbed, about why you should document your city, how your unique perspective can create change, and how to get people behind your ideas. Enjoy. Hi, Alyssa. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me.
Yes. Thank you for being on the podcast. How's life in Los Angeles?
It's great. It's cooling down. We've had kind of a hot summer, but we're trying to get towards fall, but not it doesn't always happen. Yeah.
I'm happy to hear it. Well, Alyssa, I am just overjoyed to have you on the podcast. The action that we're covering today, documenting your city, is so fun and so accessible, and one that really gets me particularly excited. I've loved all the actions we've covered so far, but this one in particular is awesome because if listeners are anything like me, and I imagine many of them are, you went to university and studied accounting or computer science or whatever interested you at the time. And then, unaware of your soon-to-be obsession with cities, you read Death and Life of the Great American City, or you read Strongtowns, or you read Curbed. And suddenly you're like, oh my gosh, like, forget this degree. Like, I have to go study town planning, or I have to go back to school and study urban design. That's the only way I can get involved in cities. And fortunately, in what we're going to cover in this podcast, that's not true. Your personal experiences as a city dweller, whether you studied city planning, accounting, whatever, are valuable. And whenever you take the time to document them, you can make considerable change in your city. And Alyssa, I know you're a perfect testament to this. So I'd love to start off by just hearing your story and how documenting your city, sure, set trajectory for your career in urbanism, but more so just got you involved in the space.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost exactly what you said. It was advertising in college instead of accounting or something else. And I grew up in, you know, a suburban part of St. Louis. So I wasn't always perhaps exposed to enough of the urban living or the great parts about urban living and diversity and all the wonderful reasons that we like to live in cities. I grew up in a place where people were afraid, the people that lived near me were afraid to go into their downtown. And luckily, my parents weren't. My parents were great about making sure we were exposed to and participating in our city and in this way. But I knew I wanted to live somewhere else and not in the suburbs per se. I knew I wanted to live in a place where I could potentially someday get around not using a car and could walk easily from, you know, my house. My house actually had no sidewalks, you know, beyond like a block away because it was just a very busy street where everybody drove. So when I went to college, I chose a place that was kind of like this perfect little quintessential college town. I went to the University of Colorado at Boulder. And then you get that wonderful kind of a micro urban experience, perhaps, like everything great compacted into a small city. But I studied advertising because I really like telling stories. And to me, that's how I wanted to do it. I thought it would be like a creative and interesting way to tell stories. Turns out I didn't like being in advertising all that much. So when I came to LA looking for a job and trying to find a place at one of these agencies, I just started doing kind of what you said. I'm not sure if I even read Jane Jacobs at that point, but I started examining how the city worked and meeting people who were doing interesting things in that city. And as I eventually realized, I did not need to have a car and I could walk places, and LA was set up for many of those things that I had been looking for. And I'll of course had all the great diversity and opportunity and experiences that I had wanted to find in my new place that I was going to live. So I put down roots here and I never looked back, and I never went back into advertising. And I just started writing stories about the city around me and focusing first on things like design and architecture and urban planning, but now has come to encompass, you know, many more things, but they're all related.
So Alyssa, you've been breaking the stereotype that LA isn't walkable for a while, huh?
Well, it took me about 7 years before I realized that, right? You might realize that sooner if you moved here now. But so this is like 2001 that I moved here. And it took me about 7 years to get rid of my car, to realize that I should or I could. But it was never looking back at that point, because it was so much more fun and it was so much more interesting. And I had so much of a better time when I chose to do that. So I couldn't envision it any other way.
And if y'all follow Alyssa on Twitter, you can see all the moments that she brings her daughter Avery on the bus. It's super fun to watch.
Yeah, now I have another one too. I have a 1-year-old, so he also enjoys it very much.
That's awesome. Alyssa, you have this amazing note on your blog about a lesson that you recalled from your friend John after winning the Design Advocate Award from the LA chapter of the American Institute of Architects. And it's so powerful that I'm going to read it verbatim. I have it here taped next to me at my little wooden desk.
Thank you.
He goes, "Living in cities is personal. And that's why writing about cities also has to be personal. That's how we make change." It gives me goosebumps. It's so profound. And despite our lack of formal city-related education, how can documenting our personal experiences help us make change in our cities?
You're giving me goosebumps as well. I'm so excited that you brought up John Chase, who was an amazing writer in Los Angeles and one of the first people that really taught me about this idea that living in cities is personal and that we can affect that change personally, and that's why we have to get out of our cars and out of our single family homes and out of all of these places that isolate us and really talk to people and be out there on the sidewalks and try to shape the city by living in it. He sadly passed away a few years ago, and I always think of him. I think of him almost every day, because he was the one who really like instructed me to embrace the fact that my last name was Walker, and which I hadn't kind of really put together, but I kind of did. You know, he was just like, you have to capitalize on this branding. This is for you. But he makes me walk with this intentionality, which I think is kind of what you're talking about, this idea that we're documenting the city through our feet or through our interactions with sidewalk vendors or people that we just encounter on the bus. And I'm always doing my research in that way. I'm always trying to figure out what works for people or pay attention to problems or try to understand the unique situations that people who don't have the same experiences or backgrounds as me might be facing because of the way we've designed our cities or what we've prioritized in our cities. So I would just say, of course, it makes sense that I'm doing it that way, but there are probably many other ways to document or to do research in your own city.
For reference, Alyssa's blog is called A Walker in LA. Her name's Alyssa Walker, so it just works perfectly. It's awesome. Alyssa, as you started documenting where you live, especially on foot, were there moments of doubt in your mind where you thought to yourself, like, are readers really going to care about this beautiful pink flower I saw in Boyle Heights? Or are they really going to care
better
about how long it took me to cross this crosswalk? Like, how did you overcome those obstacles of maybe the voice in your head saying, like, I'm not an urbanist yet, I still do have important things to say?
I still have that voice in my head because I don't have any formal training in this area. You know, like I said, I went to school to write like jingles and taglines. I don't know, do they have jingle writers anymore? But, you know, I went to school for this certain thing, but I did learn how to tell stories. And I think that we all are very good at telling stories. And I maybe got trained in a certain particular way, but I think we're all very good at telling stories in our different ways. And I do think that social media has helped us become this narrator of what we see or put questions out to an audience. It makes it feel more natural. I feel like when I started blogging, like I was the one who was doing that. And then maybe sometimes people would respond to me, but now everybody's doing that. So we're all having these conversations online and through our photos and experiences. So I'm just in awe. Like, I put things out there, but the more rewarding and enriching part for me is watching other people around me who aren't, don't have to think about these things for a living, not that I'm an expert, but who are coming back to me and saying, hey, you know, I noticed that sidewalk, it was just all busted up and I couldn't get my stroller over it. Like, what can I do? Or I noticed the crosswalk timer is not long enough for my neighbor to get across the street. And when people start to notice these things, that's when I know that maybe what I'm doing is performing a tiny bit of service, because they've picked up on how those very small things, the little things perhaps, are contributing to the larger experience of the city.
That's awesome. Yeah. Listeners, don't doubt your experiences of being on the ground and actually getting to experience these things firsthand. It is those little anecdotes of being on the opposite side of the street and watching the elderly woman unable to cross with her bag of groceries back home. I mean, that's the powerful stuff, and that's stuff that we need to be documenting. Alyssa, someone's listening to this podcast, they're feeling inspired to start documenting their own city. How would you recommend they get started? Have you had a good experience starting with a theme, like walking in LA, or can they start with just something that piques their curiosity?
I have a good experiment to start with, which is kind of the way I got started. So take where you live and get a map of some sort. I use like this old paper map called the Thomas Guide that everybody used to have in their cars when they in LA, but now we don't need that anymore because we have Google Maps. You can also use Google Maps, but draw a 2-mile circle around your house, right? And this is what I call your walk shed. And for a time that you have set for yourself, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, something like that. And any trip you're making within that 2-mile radius, you're making on foot or on a bike if you want to, or a bus. I guess these all fall in the same rules. Like, try not to drive and or try to go a different way than you've gone before. And then also try to look at, you know, what assets are located in that circle around you, and try to figure out if maybe some of the trips or daily errands that you're taking might be better accomplished inside of your walk shed. When I first did this, I lived in Hollywood where, you know, in my mind, it had nothing, just a bunch of like tourist traps and, you know, bad museums and restaurants that weren't that good. And it really taught me the richness of all different types of destinations and services that I had, you know, right outside my back door. I highly encourage people to do this. A lot of people that I've talked to who have done this have ended up maybe getting rid of their car, or they've, you know, met people or started volunteering at a, you know, nearby a group that they didn't know was there. So there's all these great opportunities that we can discover by just really limiting us to a geographic region and changing how we get around.
I love that, Alyssa. And that's such a cool methodology. I like to use the phrase living on a neighborhood level whenever I think about how I want to interact with my neighborhood. And before joining Strong Towns, I owned and operated a little corner store here in downtown Denton. And what I was able to notice among my clientele is that they were rethinking how they achieved the day's needs. So here in Texas, we really associate corner stores with gas stations. So they have to walk among pumps, and right. Maybe they associate with lottery tickets or six packs, which are great. I mean, those are two services that a corner store provides. But as they came to Blue Bag Market, they're able to discover, oh, like, I can get a single roll of toilet paper from a corner store. I can get Dawn dish detergent. The little things that people maybe don't associate with corner stores. So I love that methodology of the walking shed, Alyssa, and just to be able to discover, oh, yep, I can get toilet paper here. I can get right. a
exactly.
I don't have to go
my dry cleaner. This is
whatever.
A very good dry cleaner that's right here, you know.
It's awesome. It's awesome. And then maybe you'll pass a friend along the way or take a picture of a cute flower. I know that's what me and my girlfriend do on our morning walks. It's awesome.
Well, the flower, I mean, you point out the flower thing, but I just have to say, like, it's actually a very important thing to get to know your nature and your urban species that are around you and how they're coping. There's a great book called Unseen City by Nathaniel Johnson, which is all about this urban wilderness that surrounds us and learning about some of the most common species, like, you know, pigeons or, you know, squirrels that we see all the time. But it really opens your eyes to how it's changing and how our neighborhoods can adapt to humans and other species at the same time, and how our neighborhoods are changing, maybe due due to climate change, but also how we can welcome back new species and welcome back new animals and plants into our cities. So I highly recommend getting to know, like, you know, the 20 major species nearby and how they're doing. You know, check on their health as well.
And I imagine that improves our sense of place where we live too. In the couple episodes before this, we had Melody Warnick, who wrote This Is Where You Belong. And her thing is all about place attachment. And I bet once you live in a neighborhood and you understand the species that are unique to where you live, I mean, you take some pride in picking up the little piece of trash next to it or giving it a little bit of water if it seems to have been neglected.
Yes, exactly. Which is always the case in LA.
So Alyssa, someone has an idea of how they want to document their city. What platforms would you recommend? Is Instagram a good low-hanging fruit, good place to start? Is if someone's thinking about creating more long-form content, are there particular blogging platforms that have worked well for you?
Yeah, of course, my own blog, which is very neglected, is on WordPress. And I think Instagram is also a really good way to take the pressure off using words, because you could do something that's mostly in images, which words seem to intimidate a lot of people who aren't writers for a living. So I think Instagram's a great way to just post pictures if you want to, just take a snapshot every day. But I will say what I've been enjoying a lot as a platform, and really think it's a good way to develop an audience and to kind of get people talking about what you want to talk about, is starting something like a newsletter. And these are like very, you know, low bar for entry kind of things, just like a journal entry almost that you might get your friends to sign up for. When I just sit down to write things like this, I just pretend like I'm emailing a friend, like a letter from Los Angeles, because we don't write letters anymore. So it's almost like sending a weekly or monthly postcard of what you're looking at and what you're doing. And, you know, I subscribe to so many that are just my friends and people that are out there having cool experiences. And I love getting them because they still feel personal. I still write them back or ping them on social media and say how much I enjoy them. But it doesn't feel super public in a way. So you don't have to like put it out for the whole world to see if you don't want to. But you're still sharing, you know, your ideas and thinking through what you see and trying to make sense of it all.
So Alyssa, when you talk about email newsletters, people might initially be thinking about MailChimp and some of these more popular big email marketing platforms. One that I really like is one called Tiny Letter. It's a sister company of MailChimp. And just like you said, I don't know if there's any formatting you can do besides like maybe a header image, but it's like you said before, the beauty of these newsletters is that it's like reading a letter from a friend. These are just stripped down to just the bare essentials. So if any listeners like the idea of a newsletter that Alyssa pitched, I would definitely check out Tiny Letter. Just great way just to get started and start sharing your perspectives with your friends.
Totally.
We talked about before how our writing needs to be personal. That's how we can really make a change in our cities. Someone has an idea, say it's about documenting their walks within their walking shed. It starts with sharing our ideas and anecdotes. But I imagine a lot of folk want to be able to build a tribe and build some momentum around these ideas. How can we build a tribe around something that's so personal, like living in a city?
I love that way of thinking about it. I mean, I'm a big fan of events and coordinating big public events, meetups, whatever you want to call them, where you get people out to experience something together. I think the other really important part of it is that you're getting someone from the community or the neighborhood or the project that you're visiting to tell you about the history and talk to you about these projects and to talk to you about the relevance and the thinking behind them. I think like the coolest thing you could do is organize something like a walking tour or a bike tour or something where you can get people out experiencing the city and you can actually see for yourself what is going on and then talk to people who are part of these changes and experiencing it firsthand.
I love it. So I imagine maybe some of these people who start writing, if they're like myself, a bit more introverted. Like I like to share my ideas on the computer as opposed to face-to-face. If someone's having those doubts, how would you recommend they overcome them and understand that, hey, building a tribe in person is a great next step to getting people to buy into your personal experiences as a city dweller?
For me, like it's been about having kids, right? So it's been about this really dramatic change that has occurred in my life that's really made me change my perspective, not completely, but very much on where I live and what it does for me. That's probably the most relatable thing of all. You know, people are having children everywhere and going through the same kind of thing. But there are these kind of these shared experiences or these, I don't know, milestones in our life. I think a lot of one of the really big ones that I'm interested in now is people who are getting older and want to downsize and don't really have a place for themselves. They don't see themselves in the city where they live anymore. And like, where are they going to go? And how will they be able to afford to live there? So it's a lot of these like shared commonalities from city to city and place to place that I think we need to tell stories about so we can start to understand them.
Well, Alyssa, you've shared so much beautiful knowledge and wisdom with us. To wrap up, and this is the question we end every podcast with, how does this particular action, documenting your city, make our cities and towns stronger?
It's funny because I went to speak in Malmo, Sweden at this, it was a conference that was about tourism, but like this idea that sustainable tourism also helps neighborhoods. So bringing people into a neighborhood, it's kind of like the strong town philosophy, right? So bringing people from halfway across the globe to visit your city for the same reasons that you want to live there, because it has, you know, vibrant streets and walkable sidewalks, and it has a really good feeling and vibe there already. I thought of that a lot when I was there talking about, we wrote this list for Curbed, 101 small ways to improve your city. And this is very much, you know, in line with what you guys are talking about
here. Great article.
It was the idea that these very small things are maybe what you go visit another place for, not in the future. You know, it's not just always going to these big tourist meccas like Hollywood, where I lived for many years, but maybe it's going to a place just because it's a pleasant, wonderful, livable neighborhood. So I love this idea of, you know, looking at where you live as a place that welcomes people and a place that has those little moments where you're able to sit on a quiet, shady bench on the corner? Do you have a place that kids can feel comfortable playing if they, you know, have never been there before? Do you have streets that welcome all users, no matter what mode they're in? So I think we can look at if our blocks and our neighborhoods and our cities are welcoming in that way, and if they can be these places that we would like to visit and that we also want people, we're proud when other people come to visit us as well.
And as people listen to this podcast, if you're uncertain how to start documenting, yeah, you can start with a void, like bad crosswalks and inadequate.
Right, yeah. Like.
But you can also, on the contrary, you can focus on the goodness, like what you mentioned, Alyssa. Say you love the vibrancy of your downtown park. Like, yeah, you know, everyone loves it, but you love it in a very unique way that people do care about. So I know some people are quick to write about all the bad things happening. Right. But if you have a more positive tendency and there's things you love about your town, write about those. That's the beauty of writing. I mean, most of the time you're going to find two or three people who are behind you and want to support you in your work and want to read what you have to say or double tap that photo on Instagram, you know?
Yeah. Think of if you're making a map for someone who's never been to your neighborhood, right? Like, what would you tell them to see? And not only including like, oh, these are great restaurants, but what about the very tiny moments, that amazing hibiscus tree or whatever, you know, talking about plants, you know, making sure that you have all those little tiny moments included in what you want to share. And then you'll start to see other ones too.
Yep. And that's what makes you love your city. I mean, it's whenever you focus or just take time to notice those small things. And yes, admittedly, most of the time it doesn't happen in the car. I mean, that's
it is true, unfortunately.
Last year, I remember biking down Hickory Street. It's our main corridor downtown. And I kid you not, Alyssa, I let out a little sneeze, not too loud. And there's a pedestrian on the sidewalk nearby that said, "Bless you." And I was like, this is just like the best thing ever. This is why I bike. Like,
that's great.
I don't drive. So cool. Well, Alyssa, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me and share so much goodness with us. If listeners want to connect with you, learn more about the cool stuff you're doing, where can people find you online?
If you want to check me on across all accounts, it's A Walker in LA. And I think I'm on like everything the same, like Twitter and Instagram, and then my blog, of course. But then if you want to read some of my longer thoughts, you can go to curb.com, where I'm the urbanism editor, and check out my writing on cities there.
Awesome. Well, Alyssa, thank you so much again, and we will talk very soon.
Thank you.
Bye, Alyssa. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. If you're enjoying the content, please subscribe to It's the Little Things on iTunes, and we will chat next week. See ya.